This is Will's Band of the Week for May 29th, 2022. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris from Ron Swanson Studios.
Hey, look who's here. It's me.
And Craig from the newly named Kirsten Dunst Studios in Ipswich.
Here I am in the new Abbey Road.
All of the artists that we're going to talk about today are going to end up in Kirsten Dunst Studios just to feel the aura of having Kirsten Dunst near them. Mm-hmm. We should clarify that it isn't actually Kirsten Dunst in your studio.
No, because if she was visiting Ipswich, we'd be busy entertaining her, going to all the finest restaurants and bars.
And the smokehouse.
Indeed.
You would definitely take her to the smokehouse.
I used to work with a guy when I worked a telemarketing job, and he had this elaborate story about how he was best friends with Kate Winslet. And she would come into town and... wear disguises and stuff, and they would go out in Madison and in bars and things like that. I had no idea whether he was telling the truth or not. And then eventually he got arrested for drugs and trying to steal money from old people. So I think the story may not have been true. He was not close with the Winslet family.
Elaborate disguises, like those comedy plastic mustaches which you put up
right
your nostrils.
That looks an awful lot like Kate Winslet, but she's got a giant mustache.
Oh man. Okay, I mean, this, we have so much content. We've got three podcasters today. It's been a while, Chris. Welcome back.
Yeah, I kind of disappeared there for a little bit, but I'm back.
Wait, the heavy hitter rockers came out with albums, and you had to come on, right?
Well, not only are there the albums that we're going to talk about today, but there are so many other ones. I mean, I've spent probably most of the last week listening to Wet Leg, which you guys talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
there's a new Wilco out, Arcade Fire. What else?
I've got 14.
Harry Styles is actually really good. I know you guys probably aren't huge Harry Styles fans, but it's pretty good. So, yeah, a lot of stuff. You know what else? David actually recommended, what was this band? Bridge Dog, I think it's
right.
called.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
from 2021. Did you guys ever talk about that on the show?
No.
It's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's like, it sounds a lot like one of the bands we're going to talk about today, which is in my... bailiwick. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, Craig always brings the live reports. And we could play the jingle multiple times probably, but
we'll play it every time he starts a new one.
Yeah. All right, we'll just play it one time. I see Ron Swanson rocking to the music.
He enjoyed it. Did we get an email or something from somebody who said they loved the jingles?
A tweet. It was on Twitter. It was Hyper Brendan, friend of the podcast, and he said that he's getting the bonus song of the week jingle stuck in his head, and he was wondering if there's a solution to it. And I said no, because that just means Nicholas did his job. Right.
I'm glad he didn't say he loved the death of the week. Like, gosh, could you guys play that a lot more?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty morose.
Yeah.
Why won't more famous people die?
I guess speaking of that, it's been a pretty good week. I think another drummer died, though. the drummer for the band Yes.
Mm.
So that'd be like progressive rock. But I was unprepared to discuss it. And you just brought it up, so I just brought up the fact that I'm unprepared. But it's been basically a pretty good week for the aging rockers.
Yeah.
The guy from Depeche Mode died.
Oh, that's right.
Andy Fletcher.
Yeah.
Too sad to talk about, I think. Yeah. Too young.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode, drastically underrated in my opinion. When you talk about the best bands of the last 30, 40 years, I mean, some of their best albums were like their fifth and sixth albums. And how many bands do you see that happen to? I mean, they started off, you know, just straight electronica and then moved into the more, the more instrumental related stuff. They started mixing guitars and things like that. But it wasn't until, like the sixth or seventh album that they really hit their stride, I think. So underrated.
I was traveling last week and looking at a, restaurant to go to or something. I can't even remember exactly where I read this, but I was looking at reviews of this restaurant, and the first negative review, it was getting really great reviews, and the first one that was kind of negative was like, it said something like, "My one complaint is the music they play here. It's depressing Depeche Mode music." That's what it says. Killed the guy's mood, you know? Just doesn't work for everybody, I guess.
Normally it's Joy Division, which is described as depressing, or Morrissey's vocals.
If you went to a restaurant, they were playing Joy Division, it'd be a little weird, right?
Yeah, so if you haven't heard Music for the Masses, which is 1987, and then Into Violator, which is 1990, and that's, you know, a good 10 years into their career, definitely check those out. That's where I would start.
All right. Chris is prepared on a moment's notice for a music journalism discussion.
There's this cool machine called Google.
Yeah.
That I can actually do while you guys are talking about
restaurants at the same time.
It answers Chris pretty quickly.
Multi-skill.
You ever see those sites where you're like, I think it's like you're trying to find somebody's address or something, and so it's just like whitepages.com or anywho or something like that, like where you're trying to find a person, and you put in their name, and then it says locating, and these bars move very, very slowly from one, and it's like, what a ridiculous gimmick, because obviously a search takes, you know, a fraction of a second.
Right.
And it's just like playing this game to make you think it's like trying really hard to get information or something. It's terrible. Okay.
Get you on the hook.
Yep. Before
try
we
to get you to sign up for stuff.
Before we get Craig's actual live reports, I just found this out. I missed a gig last night in Madison. Do you, and Craig wouldn't know this, but Chris, do you know who played last night in Madison?
I do not.
There's a an annual event now that's pretty big in Madison called Bratfest. And everybody eats a lot, drinks a lot. And now I just realized it. They've kind of made it, had a lot more musical acts. But anyway, the headlining act last night at Bratfest was 38 Special.
No!
Can you believe that? I just found out about it 10 minutes before we started recording. I'm like, I can't believe I missed a free 38 Special show. That would have been
a
live report to end all live reports. But
that would have blown me out of the water. In a way, I'm glad you've missed it.
Yeah.
It is the billed as the world's largest brat festival to go eat bratwurst. And it used to be kind of a cool little neighborhood thing where you could get like a dollar bratwurst. But now it's overly commercialized and, you know, tens of thousands of people show up. And, you know, they have big bands like 38 Special and...
Yeah,
I heard people complaining about it that you have to stand 45 minutes in line now at a metal detector to get in.
Oh,
because
wow.
Of past incidents. Like there's nothing that starts out as like a cool festival that doesn't get ruined at some point by idiots. But I spent a couple of years as a celebrity cashier at Bratfest. That's what they do. They take like local celebrities and make them sell encased meats to people, and I did it for a couple of years.
I love it.
Based solely on my time on Will's Band of the Week.
Yeah, that's what it was based on. It's very justified. Okay, Craig, how about the real live reports?
Well, I was just looking for something because Chris mentioned Harry Styles there, and I saw this tweet from Sleaford Mods, which was funny. You know, Twitter's all about these funny tweets. Harry Styles, forced on you like KFC. Every unremarkable album release pounded into your sensory temples. It's insufferable. All right.
I would expect that from Sleaford Mods, and I love that. But I sent all you guys a video of Harry Styles doing Wet Leg, which is, like, honestly, the only reason I would want to be as famous as Harry Styles is so I could recommend other great bands, like lesser known bands, to people and have them listen to them, try to make them famous.
Yeah.
So I think he's doing good work trying to make Wet Leg a thing. Although they don't seem to have trouble on their own getting media. So
right.
I mean, they had Will's Band of the Week talk about them, so.
Yeah.
No. Seaford Mods, they kind of say stuff to get attention, but that's still funny, whether they're saying it to get attention or not.
That is funny.
Okay, I'll try and move along. Now, I have four here. Well, one of them is a band we're going to talk about the record shortly, so I won't talk about the music, because I don't want to, you know, jump ahead of your more insightful comments, you guys. But this was the Smile at the Berlin Tempodrome a week ago yesterday, 8 days ago. This is a band comprising a couple of members from Radiohead and a jazz drummer called Tom Skinner. As I said, we may have more on this in a bit. Listeners last week will know that I prefer to be seated these days because of my back, and I just am pretty lazy. And it was good because we were late buying tickets. I hadn't told Amanda it was happening. And I said, oh, you know, the day before we go to see Mogwai in Berlin, yeah, this new Radiohead thing is side project playing at the same venue. Why aren't we going? So probably bought seated tickets, which is all that was available. But that's good.
The fact that you love sitting is the most ironic thing ever, because if you stand, you can see everything over everyone.
Right. That's true. Everyone else loves it when I sit, because I'm not blocking them.
That's true.
Now, I won't talk about the music, as I said. So what can I say? It's a cool venue. The standing area is smaller than the seated area, and it's amphitheater style, and the seating was unallocated, just general admission, so first come, first serve, take what seats available. I was panicking about this a bit, because I thought, well, the best seats are just going to go, and then you'll just be left like in some heinously bad seat behind a pillar or something. But there's no pillars, and the way it curves around, the last seats to go are in fact closest to the stage. You'd be side on, but you'd be really close, and so but there was no problem for latecomers in that way anyway, so that was fine. It was good. They sound a bit like Radiohead. That's all I'll say, because we're going to talk about them in a minute. It's good to be in the same building as... Oh, yeah, here's a thing. So when I saw Morrissey in 2003, I think, at Manchester Arena, it was just so exciting to be in a building with someone that famous. It doesn't happen that many times. He's probably the most famous musician that I like, aside from, I guess, Radiohead, maybe Madonna. I haven't seen Madonna. I've seen Neil Young at a festival, but you're outside. So to be in a building with someone that famous is pretty cool. And so it's nice to be with Johnny Greenwood and Tom York in a building again. That was my observation about that.
I mean, you've been in a room with Will of Will's Band of the Week.
That's yeah, true.
A smaller room, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys recorded over 600 podcasts. That was a literal spit take from Craig.
And he hasn't turned into a racist like Morrissey. So we can still mention him without equivocation.
That Morrissey career path coming.
Right.
And then the next night, we went to see Bedroom and Mogwai. This is the reason we'd gone to Berlin. Well, actually, I'm going to come back because I saw Mogwai again and Bedroom yesterday. So let's jump to the Juno, Deaf and Hater one. This was in London. This was a couple of nights ago with our colleague and friend Jeremiah. He does get around.
He does.
My God. Today he's hanging out with Matt Berninger of The National.
Yeah, he is.
like, what's happening?
He was just in Africa, and then he had 6 days in London as a little break. And so I caught up with him. And his friend, I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, Adia. Something like that joined us. We had a really fun evening. The Shacklewell Arms, this is a place before COVID, you wouldn't have gone there for a midweek show and expected to get home on the last train because things used to run so late. Like first band 10 or maybe 10:30. You're looking at your watch thinking, God, it hasn't started. But now I just thought I took a chance because things tend to be finishing earlier now. And sure, it was done by 10:15, so that was fine. And the opening up was Juno Def. That was an all-female trio from Malmo as well, in Sweden. Good. Refreshing to see a band with three women. That was what Jeremiah's friend remarked, and I kind of agreed with her. Because there was a study on the BBC the same day, study, like a little analysis, of UK festival headliners this summer. And the acts with either one woman or all female were like 15% of everything. And the one with all men, or you know, at least one male member, was 80% or something. So, yeah, nice. And then Hater was the headline act. I had a great spot right up front, right in front of the guitarist. I was able just to watch him on his pedals and how he was playing the guitar through the whole thing, which is kind of cool. You don't really get that, obviously, when you're listening at home to the records. It's nice to have that, you know, to see how they make these noises, these sounds. That was that. Hater and Juno Def, the Swedish doubleheader.
Cool.
I believe actually part of my lineage is from Malmo, Sweden. So,
well,
you
should go there. And
I have a line of Otterströms, which is definitely a Swedish name.
That's good.
So, yeah.
And then live reports 3 and 4, Bedroom and Mogwai, one in Berlin, one in London last night. The Berlin one was better. Amanda and I were agreed about this. We thought it was partly because we'd been in a beer garden in the afternoon. Went there with my friend from high school, Phil, who's lived in Berlin for around a decade. And we just had a few beers with him. It was a fun time. And we sort of talked about this, and you can't separate the show from the time and place. If you're coming from work, it's just such a different feel to if you've been, it's Saturday afternoon and you've had a few drinks and a nice socializing. So, yeah, Bedroom, they kind of play this wall of noise as well. I think I've described it before. It's not like they're recorded material. So they're kind of heading in a Mogwai direction or slow dive sort of direction when they play live. And then, well, Mogwai, just absolutely amazing in Berlin. So loud, overpowering, and they just played hit after hit, really, like 14 songs, something like that. And just, yeah, career-spanning set of all their best stuff.
See, I like Mogwai, but I wouldn't be able to pick out what the hits are.
Nor would they, I don't think. It's just me saying that as a fan.
I always enjoy it when I go see a band and they play all the same songs that I like of theirs, because it somehow validates my taste.
Right.
Like, oh, well, if the band thinks that this is their best song and I think it's their best song, then it's just objectively true. It's just science.
I think that's a mark of a good band, one that knows to play their best songs, not the songs they want to play.
But why do they want to play lesser songs? Why would they say, let's play some of the lesser songs? Let's play some of the songs that we don't like as much.
It's a good question, but bands do it.
Yeah.
Well, they do it if they know that the songs they don't like as much are really popular, I guess. They have to compromise then.
Yeah.
It's like when I went to see the Decemberists and they played their whole album front to back. And it's like, that's pretty ballsy to say, we have a new album coming out and you guys are going to want to hear every song off of it in order. Because people go to see the hits. Now, they took a break and came out and then played some of the hits. So it wasn't just that album, but yeah, it's bold. Yeah.
So I had a couple of observations about these two shows. It was quite funny. At the end of Bedroom, had been on the whole European tour with Mogwai. And at the end last night, they said of their set, they said, thanks so much for Mogwai having along on the whole tour. Obviously Mogwai are British music legends and Bedroom are just starting out. So it's like Mogwai took them under their wing. And he said, we've enjoyed being on tour with them. We've learned a lot. I just thought it was a really strange thing to say. What are you going to learn? All Mogwai know about is effects pedals. I can just imagine them sitting around before the shows after they've done the sound check and they're teaching them how to use certain kinds of pedals to make a really loud sound. I don't know. It just amused me. And the other funny thing was before the encore at the Berlin show, Stuart, who's kind of the de facto leader of Mogwai, he does sing sometimes, but they're not really a band that has singing. He was back on stage after the encore. And the rest of the band was off to the side, flipping him the V, saying, no, we're not coming back on. It's just quite funny. He's standing up there on his own. Just the band having a good time being on tour.
Did you, as a concert goer, learn anything from Mogwai? Was it an educational
Can't
endeavor?
Say that I did. Glasgow seems like a cool place, but I kind of knew that.
Of course.
There we go. Live report's done.
All right. Excellent. You never let us down, Craig. Well, are we ready for our exciting extravaganza of new music?
Yeah, fired up.
Let's Well, let's start with a smile. Following up on Craig's live report, I'm sure Chris has done more music journalism than I have on the smile. The basic music journalism, of course, is that it's Tom York and Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, plus this guy Tom Skinner, the drummer, who's affiliated with a group described as jazz called Sons of Kemet. I sampled them a little bit. They're very interesting. I remember now that the album that came out like 2 or 3 years ago got some good press, and I remember listening to it a bit, but I never got around to like really absorbing it. But it seemed pretty cool. So somehow
the drumming is indistinguishable from many recent Radiohead efforts. However,
I think
like it's got the same thing.
That's probably true. Yeah. So
Tom Skinner's been listening to a lot of A Moon Shaped Pool.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. We can start on the drumming then, because I made some notes about this. What we were saying is, you kind of think, to me, it does sound like jazz drumming on the Smile album. And the extent of my jazz drumming knowledge comes from that film, oh dear, Whiplash.
Right.
That's all I know about jazz. And I know it's really fast. And then on this album, I doubt we'll be able to find a pick between us which illustrates this, but there is some really fast drumming. Fast and light. I was just demonstrating that, for the listeners can't see.
Yeah, it was like I was there. It was like I was at a Smile show.
Well, yeah, I just imagine Phil Selway at home crying. Sobbing quietly. Why have they chosen this guy when I can do that just as well? And he's just practicing his fast light drumming, jazz drumming.
He's off doing a solo album, so he'll be fine. Yeah, you have to wonder what the dynamic is there. Like, Tom York and Johnny Greenwood are like, yeah, you guys, go do your own thing. We're gonna record our own album, and this could very well be a Radiohead album. But
yeah, I think so. So let's give Chris the first pick.
All right. Well, I probably, as everybody knows, gravitate towards the most tuneful ones, and this is the one that really stuck out to me upon first listen. So let's play "The Smoke."
That's The Smile. The album is called A Light for Attracting Attention.
So, Craig, having seen that live, how much of this is like electronic drumming effects versus actual physical human drumming?
Wow. You've got to remember this is kind of a venue midway between, well, on its way to being an arena, and I was a long way. But I don't think any of that one would have been recorded. I think that's played live only.
Yeah.
Maybe on some of the songs there would be a backing track, but I can't say I made a particular note of anything like that.
Was it just those three guys, or were there extra musicians on stage?
Just those three, and then for the You'll Never Work in Television Again, which is the single off of Here, one of the tracks, they had the supporting act, Robert Stillman, join them on saxophone, I think, and he's in the album credits as playing sax on the song as well.
So. Cool. So yeah, that's the one that initially stood out to me as being like, huh, this might be actually be a real, this might be a good album. Honestly, listening to it for the first time, it didn't really strike me as anything special. I just kind of had giving it a casual listen. I thought like this kind of sounds like a lot of Moon-Shaped Pool B-sides. But as I listened to it more and more, I really like it. Like every song now is stuck in my brain and I enjoy it quite a bit. So giving away my my review. They've let's see, Pitchfork said it was the best Radiohead side project to date, and I would think I would have to agree with that. And I've listened to Phil Selway's solo album, and I've listened to Atoms for Peace and Tom York's solo album and all of that stuff. And the only quibble I would have is that some of Johnny Greenwood's soundtrack work is absolutely amazing. And he was nominated for an Oscar this year for Power of the Dog. I'm not sure if he win it, but yeah, his soundtrack work is incredible, which leads me to my final point. I have a projector with a
PowerPoint, with a kind
PowerPoint.
Of thing.
Yeah. point C is that I think Johnny Greenwood is actually the real genius of Radiohead, because I obviously all those guys are great. Tom York, great, but all of the stuff of Radiohead's that I like the most has to do with Johnny Greenwood. And when Tom York is set off to do things by himself, I don't think it's really been as good. So I give Johnny Greenwood the lion's share of the credit for that. Controversial
Craig.
Take. Johnny Greenwood, only genius in Radiohead.
Right. Craig, you can now comment on the music of this band.
Yeah, I really like the bass riff in the song that Chris picked out there. And especially, I think, if this is entirely wrong, I'll hold my hands up and say it's wrong, but I think Tom and Johnny were swapping between bass and guitar throughout the show. I think one of them plays bass on some of the songs and then one on the other, which is not surprising, really. Obviously, they both can play them, but yeah, just good to see that. I particularly like how that song just ends as well. The smoke, it goes boom at the end. And
oh, yeah,
just
yeah.
Really powerful punch. Yeah. And something that strikes you when you see, you don't get to see Tom York perform that much. And when you do, it's obviously a huge place. You're so far away and they don't play very much anymore. He's such a distinctive voice. There's absolutely no way you're going to mistake that vocal for anyone else.
Yeah. Other people have tried.
I guess, yeah.
There are a lot of people who have tried to sound like Tom York over the last 30 years, but failed.
We're wondering why this even needs... I'm kind of in agreement with Chris, actually. I listened to this quite a bit. And for example, there's something else we're going to talk about a little bit later. You listen to it twice and you're done. Or something like Chuck Race, the band from Australia. Or the Chills album, when they come out with one, you listen to it twice and you feel like you've got a good grasp of it. The Smile, you've been 6 to 8 listens in and you still, I don't feel like I understand the whole of it. It's quite long as well, 53 minutes. So it's just a lot to dig into and you have to want to try to do that. But yeah, I think it's good.
Best Radiohead side project ever?
I really liked Tom York's first solo one, Eraser. And that was probably my favourite album of that year. I really liked Radiohead a lot. You know, what year would that have been? 07 or 08? So maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I liked them a lot. But I've kind of gone away a bit. I think that's probably still better than this, but I'd have to go back.
All right. How about a pick, Craig?
I was sure. Well, Will, you said there's one standout song, so now I'm worried.
I said that there are two. There are two standout. So
right, you threw down a challenge to us to pick
I'm like,
the two best songs.
There are, and I haven't divulged them yet, but
I've clearly picked one already.
I think there are two that are head and shoulders above. You know, sometimes you listen to an album and you're like, oh, I love this one song. It's my favorite. What? I have two of those on this album. But let's have Craig go first. Just he might pick one of them.
All right. And if I don't, well, if I'm not here after this, then Will's cut me off the call.
Right.
To me, this was the highlight of the live show. And I also think it's the best on the album. It's track 13, Skirting on the Surface.
The way the songs develop, I feel kind of bad cutting it off, but yeah, can't argue with that pick, although it was not one of my two standouts.
Wow.
Nor was Chris's pick. So we have some different standout picks on this album, but it shows the depth of the album also.
I picked two more standouts, so we'll see if yours and mine overlap at all.
Okay, so I have a comment about Thom Yorke and Radiohead, and the first, you guys were saying that, you know, his voice is so distinctive and people have tried to sound like him, you know. But you know what he does? He's got this falsetto that he can pull off. He's got, like, the best falsetto in rock, right? I think it usually just doesn't work that well to sing mostly in falsetto, but he's got a way of doing it. The other thing I was going to say is, for as much of the intricate electronics and on this album more guitar stuff, which I think is really great, and the complexity of everything, they do some really great ballads that are just more of a, like, a simple song, and so this song just completely blew me away. I just think it's a just beautiful ballad. I gotta play it. It's called Free in the Knowledge. Change this
was just a bad moment. We were fumbling around, but we won't get caught like that. Soldiers on our backs, we won't.
There you go.
That is a great song.
Yeah. My second pick.
Ah, so you did overlap.
Yeah, I could use a lot of superlatives to describe that. I just love it. It's I saw a video of Thom Yorke playing that solo, and it was pretty amazing. You know, he looks kind of like an aging rocker, right? He's got this scruffy beard, you know, and then he's playing this beautiful song, and I don't know how old he is now, right? Is he 60 or something? I don't know.
53, I think.
Okay, in his 50s. And I don't know. His voice is still really good. But the song is just, I just love it. So, well, the other track that I just think is great is You Will Never Work in Television Again. It's got this great rocking guitar, and it's. I think part of it is just... hearing more guitar in their stuff is cool. I mean, they're obviously great at the electronics too, but yeah. So
yeah, it is a good song, that one. And the tricky thing is they made a deliberate choice not to make that music anymore. And everything they've done since 2001 has been good. It's not as if it's bad.
Yeah.
And they started to mix the guitar in a bit more again after Amnesiac and Kid A, didn't they? Hail to the Thief and In Rainbows have a bit more guitar, but then once they go back to that sound again, you think, it's so obvious when they do it that it's a little bit difficult, I think, because they're almost like trying to pretend they were who they were in 1995 again, and they've said clearly that they're not that, so
yeah,
it makes it a bit awkward for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Just in terms of theme and lyrically, I think this does hail back to Hail to the Thief quite a bit in terms of politics and kind of sneering at the world around them and things like that, even as I guess they're probably 20 years older than when Hail to the Thief came out. I think that was 2003.
Yeah.
So yeah, they haven't lost that, their political edge at all. My other two songs were, A Hairdryer and Thin Thing, which goes to show that our picks on this are pretty much all spread out, which tells you how good of an album it is, I think.
And I had another. Yeah. My next one was actually Speech Bubbles. So we've covered like three quarters of the album.
So. Yeah, I had Hairdryer too, because I was going to pick that. If we failed to find the jazz drumming, that was an example, because it's really fast drumming on that.
If you're putting it up for a vote, I say play some of it. Show what you're talking about.
Okay, here's a little blip of A Hairdryer. I made that a short blip because if we don't keep moving, we'll be recording for 2 hours.
This is not the Christmas end of year Christmas special.
Right.
I did want to note that I recently read a book by former MTV VJ Kennedy, who was big in the early 90s, and she had some stories about Radiohead at the MTV Beach House in like 1994.
Wow.
When they were touring their first album, Pablo Honey. And she thought it was hilarious that first of all, she doesn't like Tom York at all. She thinks he's a like pretentious douchebag when she met him. And then like here's Radiohead doing their song Creep, this, you know, emo anthem or whatever, but they're doing it at a beach house where people are like sitting around a pool in bikinis and stuff. Like just the contrast between the moodiness of Radiohead and like, you know, these people drinking tequila and throwing beach balls at each other was funny.
All right, final comment. According to a Google search that took a fraction of a second, Tom York is in fact 53 years old, and he's also 5'5", which is interesting.
Oh my.
There you go.
I would tower over
him. Literally half as tall as Craig.
Yeah. That's what I think. Craig is 10'6", right? I think. Yeah. Approximately. all right. Let's move on. Let's see. We have two more. And the next band I'm going to nominate is Podcast Favorites Say Sue Me.
Hey.
Do they qualify? They qualify as podcast favorites, right?
I think so. I've certainly talked about them enough.
We saw them 2019 in Austin, right?
Yes.
They're from Busan, South Korea. And what was the other trivia I was going to mention?
Their drummer died after South by Southwest, which isn't great.
It wasn't clear to me that that was the same drummer.
Yeah, they may have had a fill-in for South by Southwest while the other
so.
Guys...
The other guy, yeah. Fell and hit his head or something. Well, it was just terrible. Just
awful.
So now they have a different drummer and a different bass player, but the singer and guitar player are the same from the beginning of the band, which dates all the way back to 2012, which is weird, but that's what I read. It's their third album. It's a second one that... I've heard. I can't remember. We really liked the last one. I can't remember if I ever went back and listened to the first one. I may have once or something.
But I have, and it's good.
So here we go. The album is called "The Last Thing Left," and okay. Who's going to take over this discussion? I think we should have Chris again because he's our top music journalist.
Chris, off you go.
I will only do it because I have actually spoken to this band at South by Southwest when they were done playing. I went up and made it a point to go say hello and talk to lead singer Sumi Choi, who she seemed to have had a few drinks. Let's put it that way. But I told her I was from Wisconsin, and she knew where Wisconsin was, and her English was not great, so you have to wonder sometimes, you know, these bands from Asia, how much they practice their English, but because the English in the music sounds great, so do they listen to English bands and kind of pick up the cadence and that type of stuff from that, or
yeah, it's interesting
because they write all their songs in English anyway. But yeah, they were very pleasant. They were one of the bands that I really wanted to go see at South by Southwest because I had heard them beforehand. And they're kind of this wave of Asian bands that are doing the 80s and 90s pop rock that American bands are refusing to do. So immigrants, they get the job done.
Yep.
So just get to give people an idea of what I'm talking about. I'll start with the hit on the album. This is the first song that they did a video for, and it is called "Around You."
Reason to get out of here. There isn't
That's Say Sue Me, and the album is called The Last Thing Left.
Yeah, I think that's, I guess, one of the reasons that I like that song is it's a little more in line with what they've done in the past, although it is a little bit, it's a little bit out of place on this album, which is a little bit slower, a little bit more contemplative. They seem to be growing up both musically and lyrically on this album. So, so yeah, that's one that I like because it reminds me of the past stuff. But their new stuff is really great too.
I'm going to come out and say it. It's the Korean Camera Obscura.
All right, I made a note, and this is already written down on my notes, that comparing it to the last album, I wrote, more Camera Obscura and less Yola Tango.
There we go.
So
that's when we get paid the big money, Will.
Yep. I miss the Yola Tango part a little bit. I think I was kind of primed to hear a little bit more rockin', and I got the Camera Obscura instead. But there's nothing wrong with the Camera Obscura either. So it's still solid. Probably I think I probably like the last one a little bit more. But I'm still on board with Say Sue Me.
I would say Camera Obscura is probably deeper into the violins and the orchestral arrangements than Say Sue Me is. But point well taken, and I also love Camera Obscura as well. So,
Craig, then it's time to make a pick.
Yeah, I'll do that. It's mostly that vocal which makes me think of Camera Obscura. This album could easily, for me, be from a British indie band of anyone in the last 30 years.
Right.
It's probably Scottish, if anything, but easily English too, which is not bad in any way. I'm going to go with track 5, No Real Place. No real place to go with this into your favorite bed. No real place to go for winter to summer's end. Cause there's a thin condition, so there's love into the state of just watching time comes and goes. And when we no real place to go, we can delight for everything with sense. I'm just watching the water flow to the same place. I'm just watching that.
Okay, we're back on track now. That was also my top pick.
Ah, that was my third pick.
All right, so we're on board here.
I come to these podcasts 5 picks deep, every band.
That's good. you're prepared for every contingency. So that one combines a little bit more rock and guitars, but also the poppiness too. So
who are some of the cool Asian bands that we like that are making the music that we like? There's like I Mean Us, there's Otoboke Beaver, there's who else? Chai.
Say Sumi.
Say Sumi.
There have to be a few more, but
Drinking Boys and Girls Club.
Choir, there's that band
Choir.
Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. The Lemons. Did you see them at South by Southwest?
I don't believe I saw the lemons.
Oh, gosh. The Mongolian shoegaze.
Oh, fun.
But not not My Bloody Valentine shoegaze, more restrained, like when the pedal isn't quite turned up to 11, more like 8.
Yeah.
Really good. More like widescreen indie than shoegaze.
It's fun.
It sounds like it's turning it into an NPR, like, world music expose.
Right.
I don't know if Mongolia is in Asia. Yeah, it must be. Come on, it is.
All right. I'll make a pick. Let's go with the next one. Number 6, To Dream. Let's say Sumi.
Well, we have picked my 1, 2, and 3. So,
all right.
Yeah. We are on the level.
There's a fun little trivia item about this, and that is the last song is called George and Janice. Did you guys read what that's about?
It's about like the marriage of their manager, their producer.
The founders of the record label, Damnably Records, George and Janice, they apparently they recorded and gave them this song as a wedding gift. So yeah, I'm going to play a tiny little bit of this track, cuz then I have a follow up. So it's a little kind of playful kind of track, right? And so George and Janice, apparently the bands on their label really like them because, you know, they write a song for them, and they're not the only one. Do you guys know this? There's a song on the new Otoboke Beaver album called George and Janice.
Come on.
And it sounds a little different. I'll play some of it. How can you not like that? It's just
did you know there is a song on the Smile album, a hidden track?
Oh,
Janice.
You stole my joke. I was just about to say, are you going to play us the Smile George and Janice song now?
It's actually a hidden track you have to reverse from the first song of the streaming services. Rewind.
Oh my god. Oh, okay.
Every band now, it's the law, has to write a song called George and Janis.
I love it.
If you listen to the Smile album backwards, then the world emerges from being a hellscape into something more more optimistic, like George and Janis's Wedding.
Right. All right.
There's a song on the Mogwai album, which is like some American guy narrating this thing about it's Led Zeppelin, isn't it? When you listen to the song backwards, it sounds like Worship Satan or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the whole Mogwai song is about this nutcase narrating this spiel monologue about he was telling us to worship Satan. No, it's very good.
Well, that was the whole Beatles thing, like the Paul is dead thing, right?
Yeah.
Like if you play one of their songs backwards.
That's right. That's more famous than the Led Zeppelin thing. Those are probably the two most famous play backwards conspiracies or whatever.
I'm not 100% sure, but it may have been disproven that Paul McCartney's dead.
It does seem to me that he's alive.
Yeah. Demonstrably false proposal.
Yeah.
There's a famous SNL skit where Chris Farley is interviewing Paul McCartney, and I believe he says, you know, remember that time where it's the song said Paul is dead? Like, is that true?
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on. We've got one more featured band. Indie rock veterans, right? Bell and Sebastian. And there's not a guy named Bell and a guy named Sebastian. Apparently there's an old children's book that they got the name from. So
a French children's book.
There's Stuart Murdoch, though, right? The front man. He's considered like the front man, even though they have seven people in the band.
Yeah, used to have a lot more. But yeah, he's kind of the driving force behind it and the most sustained member, I guess.
Yeah, if you could go on Wikipedia, they have that color chart. Have you seen that where they do the band members like from the beginning, and there's like a bar. So if you're with the band from the very beginning, the bar goes all the way across, and then they have like, you know, the other former band members and current ones.
But do they have that for 38 Special?
They should. They probably
do. Have been dipping in and out of 38 Special for the last 50 years.
I'm sure they have it for 38 Special.
Let's see if they have it for them. I did see that. There's a really cool graphic on the Wikipedia page.
So
there's something else funny on that page. Oh, yeah, they do have it for 38 Special. there is no member who's been in there the whole time. Is that true?
What, 38 Special?
It's ridiculous. There's Don Barnes, who's been there most of the time, but he missed a bit in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, he's the guy that like sings Hold On Loosely, so that's like you got to have Don Barnes.
on the Van Sebastian page, it says they've curated this festival three times called Bowley Weekender, and I went to the middle one of the three. It just tickled me. It said, the third one was a little bit different. It was on a boat. But that was that's pretty different. They curated a music festival on a boat. It was like $1,000 a ticket or something insane. But the lineup was pretty good.
Wow.
I was going to say that Bell and Sebastian are everybody's favorite Glaswegians, but I think, especially here in Madison, that award goes to Shirley Manson of the band Garbage.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Who's legendary here, an indie rock hero. So we'll give Bell and Sebastian second.
They formed in 1996 in Glasgow. And this is either their 10th or 11th album, I think, depending on whether you count the... There was a movie soundtrack they did. So basically, it's their 10th album. But they haven't had a regular full album in 7 years.
Wow.
Mercifully. we'll get to my feelings about Bell and Sebastian in a bit.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Wow. Controversial.
All right. The new album is called A Bit of Previous. Maybe Chris is just going to say it's terrible, but I'm going to pick a track. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Maybe I'm in a ballad mood, but I really think this is probably one of the more, you know, ballady type tracks, but I think it's great. It's number 5, Do It For Your Country. Lying next to you.
in your state of glory. Sad to see you go, miss you little hole. Sad to read the end of story. Watch, baby, as you go. If you think the world's full of people sent to hate you, then it will be so. 'Cause you make the world and you make the people in it. Everything you see, feel, experience happens in your sloppy soul, girl. The world is just a game, something made of clay, but you are the great creator. So banish all your fears, grab it by the ears, love and other things of beauty reign. Ask not what your country can do for you, baby, do it for your country. Less sedentary. You dream of being a star, but you have we are. You just have to time your entry. Your freedom and your youth flowing through your veins. Desperate that it would elude you. Let me wish you peace.
That's Belle and Sebastian from the new album, A Bit of Previous.
Yeah, very nice pick. Good song.
That's what I've got. Who's
Sounds
going
like
next?
Sebastian to me.
Very much so, yes.
I think it's I'll just give the rest of my comments, I guess. I just put it on because I thought, well, there's a new Belle and Sebastian album, and they're like indie rock legends. So I was traveling, and I'm like, I'm just going to put this on. And kind of song after song came on where I kept saying to myself, that's pretty good. That's pretty nice and pleasant. And I don't mean, sometimes you say pleasant, it seems like you're kind of minimizing it, but I liked it. I think it's consistent and good and solid album. That's my review.
Yeah, I would agree. They've become one of our favorites. If they play, you've got to take out the pandemic period, obviously, but they usually tour every year and we go and see them once a year. And it's such a good band. It's just, I don't know, I just like it when people, including me, say a live band is fun, but the truth is it's fun when they play. They have a lot of good songs. I think when you get to this point in your career as a band, the Manic Street Preachers are here, Mogwai are arguably here, British Sea Power are here. Mm-hmm. You just have to have two good songs on an album which you're going to play live, and the rest of the album has to be listenable enough. And that sounds like I'm damning this with faint praise, but it's better than that. But you just, a couple of these are going to join the live set to enable them to play something new. And yeah, it's good.
Might as well make a pick now, Craig.
Let's do it. You didn't steal my pick, and I had four picks.
Wow.
So that's quite remarkable. Normally we're pretty in tune. Well, I just like the little synth starter in this one, and it's got a good pace to it. So you had the ballady one, so it's good. I'll pick something slightly different just to keep things, to show some diversity on the album. Track 3, Talk to Me, Talk to Me.
Peace inside a sanctuary I live. shine to the sun. This spectacle gets to you, life is always new. Talk to me, talk to me. From my waking sleep, I fear you're planning to prize yourself away from me. You're planning to exit from my misery. I can take a lot, but I'm not prepared to face the alone. Confusion is trying to take hold of me. All I wanted was peace inside a sanctuary. I lived my life so desperate to be in control.
That's Bell and Sebastian. I would say that's very Bell and Sebastian, right? I mean, that's just like so, I mean.
Pure uncut Bell and Sebastian.
Yeah. Yeah.
In its purest form, distilled down to its its bass.
Yep.
It's strange. We were getting into music in early 2000s, my friends and I, late teenage years, and they had that album, Fold Your Hands, Child, Walk Like a Peasant. And I just couldn't, it sounded so depressing. I just didn't. And the picture on the cover, I'm going to bring it up now to make, yeah. I mean, it looks like people are arguing. It looks depressing. But what a cheerful, poppy band. Okay, the lyrical content could be a little bit deeper once you listen to the lyrics. But superficially, this is pop music. It's very accessible. So my initial impression was the wrong one, is what I'm saying.
So, yeah, there's probably no band that I enjoyed more in the late 90s than Bell and Sebastian. I was all in on, like, Tiger Milk and If You're Feeling Sinister. I went and I got all the EPs and the singles, and so I was totally in. I'd play Tiger Milk for my other friends that liked kind of like hardcore punk stuff. They'd be like, have you lost your mind? There's like flutes and stuff and violins. And I think I went to see them in Chicago, probably 2000, 2001, something like that. Dragged my then girlfriend, maybe wife at the time. And they had like the full orchestra situation going on, where it was just, I'd put it in the top five concerts I've ever seen. Like, it was, you talk about it being joyful. It was just amazing. And I still have a T-shirt from that, which does not fit anymore. So it's a museum piece now. But somewhere along the line, you know, they dropped the violins and they started getting more into like Thin Lizzy type territory. And I think it was like The Life Pursuit is probably the album that kind of turned me off on them. And I went back down to Chicago probably 2006 or 7 to see them again. And they just weren't very good. Like, I just didn't enjoy it at all. So I kind of dropped out of the Bell and Sebastian business since then. And so I'm very pleased that this album came out and I like it. It's not, I don't think it has any of the high points of like Dirty Dream number 2 or There's Too Much Love. Like, when they kick into those violins and stuff and they're just like floating above the song, they're absolutely unbelievable. So this sounds a little bit more standard to me. But I still enjoyed it, and I've still listened to it a bunch of times. I know it's frowned upon, but I will take the first song on the album, which I think kind of reminds me the most of the golden years, which is called Young and Stupid.
Thank you. come with dogs. Getting through the nightly slog. Latches in the mind. You were young and stupid. Keeps us warm at night. All are young and stupid. Makes us feel delighted.
Yep, that one definitely has the layer of violin over it.
Yeah, so we talked about other bands trying to sound like Camera Obscura. Well, Camera Obscura tried to sound exactly like Belle and Sebastian. So it's all the chain. I mean, you heard back in the day, well, they sound like Nick Drake or they sound like the Smiths. And I suppose there's some of that. But I actually got into the Velvet Underground after I had been listening to Belle and Sebastian. And it was only then that I realized that, man, Belle and Sebastian really rips off a lot of Velvet Underground songs. I mean, they had to be big fans. They name check them in a couple songs as well. Mm. So I think there's definitely some of that.
I think it's when you start out an indie band, you have to name check the VU. So required in the lyrics. Well,
yeah.
Making life-size models of the Velvet Underground. It's something like that. Anyway, I like this album, and maybe it's just because it's exceeding my expectations, but yeah, it's good.
Cool.
The Smiths thing is interesting. I think Stuart Murdoch, when I saw them play in Sheffield around 2003, Stuart was saying on stage how he hates the Smiths, and Stevie Jackson, another songwriter in the band, really loves them. I can't imagine Stuart Murdoch has always hated the Smiths. Come on.
I reckon this is one of those stories
where he loved Morrissey and then something happened. I don't know. But no, maybe he always hated them. But it can't be serious.
One of the songs that I like on here is sung by Sarah Martin, who I think doesn't get enough credit. And I think she's interesting. The initial version of the band had Isabel Campbell, who went off and started making solo albums. And I think she did some with Mark Lanegan of the Screaming Trees that were actually pretty good albums. But Sarah Martin is interesting just because I think she's got a really interesting voice. Like, I don't think she's that great of a singer, but she really gives it her all. And I was thinking of how many, like, I obviously love a lot of female artists, but how many have kind of distinct voices? I mean, for male artists, we probably are a lot more accepting when they have voices that aren't typical. But for female artists, there aren't a whole lot that kind of veer from a certain sound. Or a certain affectation. And so I appreciate that out of her, that I enjoy her songs. But yeah, she's definitely a lot different than the Isabel Campbell kind of, I think it was heavily affected. And
All right, there you go. I think we've done it justice. I think we've done all three bands justice.
Fold your hands, Will. You walk like a peasant.
All right, I guess it's time now.
It's the bonus song of the week. It's the bonus song of the week.
Hopefully now Brendan will have that stuck in his head for another week. So, you can just turn it off now. You don't want to get poisoned by the actual bonus song. You want to just get that jingle. That's the main thing. All right. Well, somebody has to go first, so I'll go first. One thing I love about the bonus song of the week is there are no limits, right? You can pick anything you want. I go for an old track, but sometimes it's fun when there's a new thing, maybe on an EP or something, or just that you ran across. And so, yeah, I found this thing on one of the cool blogs, and it's called Sea Lemon. It's a woman from Seattle, I believe. I better verify my music journalism. But, and this is an example of, we'll talk about all the lineage of bands, or lineage is the wrong word, but just the line of influence, right? And I like the fact now that there are artists who seem to be influenced by one of our favorite bands always, right? There's a certain brand of tuneful pop with a little bit of, there's a little kind of shoegazy element to it, and a little jangle maybe. But so this sounded to me like it was always influenced, and I thought it was pretty cool. So it's a 5-song EP by Sea Lemon. EP is called Close Up, and here's track number 5, Turn Away. Sea Lemon.
Band, yeah, that's really good.
Band to watch. Check it out. Yeah.
They're going to be the next Beach Bunny.
Could be.
I told the story to you guys on our little chat, but I got in my car and put Beach Bunny on the other day and picked my son up. And he looks at me, he's like, "Oh, you're a Beach Bunny fan now?" He's 16 years old. And I was like, "Wait a minute. Like, I liked Beach Bunny when you were like 13 years old."
You said I'm the reason you like Beach Bunny, son.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that's it's good that he's turning into a music snob, although he needs to find his place. Like, I'm the music guy in this family. I did actually end up taking I took my daughter to a Milwaukee Bucks game, which is an hour drive. And we get in the car, and she hooks up her phone through the Bluetooth and starts playing a playlist. And she's 18 years old. And the playlist has, like, all the songs from age 3 on that I have played for her, just, like, in the car, hoping that she liked them. And she never, ever at any point said anything about any of this music or whatever. But I think it was just to show me that it stuck with her and that – like, just kind of a, "Yeah, Dad, I've been paying attention all along and just never said anything to you." So my life's work is done.
I mean, sweet.
There was some Belle and Sebastian on there. There was all kinds of good stuff.
Was there any Soundgarden?
There's no Soundgarden. There was, let's see, some Ramones. There was some Sufjan Stevens. There was all kinds of stuff. So,
that's great.
Yeah, all the good stuff. Yeah,
her little way of telling me that, like, "Don't worry, Dad, I've been paying attention," even though I haven't really said anything.
Okay, how about a bonus song, Chris?
So I just thought of this one in the moment because this song became newsworthy this last week. Politico did a piece. There have been a number of pieces about how Generation X are now becoming more right wing, which kind of surprised me given that I am of that era. And so they followed this state senator from Iowa who's turned into like this big Trumpist, but she was in the 1995 band The Rentals, which had a big song on hit song on indie radio called Sons of P. And it was just interesting to me, you know, kind of being in the indie music world at the time, that a lot of these people now are changing their politics and It's not even like on the left and right continuum, like what you would normally think is left and right. It's like left and whatever Trump is now. He's kind of off the grid.
Yeah.
But yeah, this woman was in the band The Rentals, which was kind of a side project of one of the guys in Weezer. And to my surprise, also in the band, and I did not know this, was Maya Rudolph, who's now a famous actress. She was on Saturday Night Live for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So this song was in the news, and the female backing vocals that you hear in it are now a big Trumpist state senator from Iowa. So, yeah, let's hear it.
Ooh-hoo-hoo. I'm a good guy for a gal. So won't you look my palm over? Ooh-hoo-hoo. I've got time for a chat. So won't you tell me my future? I'm gonna break down at 50, and I'm not quite a stallion. I'm a good guy for a gal, and I'm mentally slipping. Oh yeah, oh yeah, what's that you see? In my life, and I'm dying at 90. Oh yeah, oh yeah, what's that you see? Oh boy, find out what's up with me. Oh yeah, what's that you see? Tell me more of what's gonna be. If you're friends with me, well then you're friends with me.
That's Chris's bonus song of the week, The Rentals, Friends of P. That's the letter P.
I honestly had not thought of that song in 7 years?
Yeah, me either.
Years.
Yeah, that's funny.
And I remember it being a big hit. It was like on 120 minutes. There was a video and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Good. I love it, actually.
Yeah, it's a catchy 90s track for sure.
I did go back and I listened to that album, and the album is actually pretty good. Like, if you like power pop type of stuff with a little synth added in there, it's pretty good.
Yep.
How much in royalties will this Trumpist politician get if I start listening to the album on the streaming services?
I will send you a check for 38 cents for whatever she makes from listening on Spotify.
Yeah.
It's a well-documented thing, isn't it? How people get a little bit more conservative. With a small c, but also with a big c, I suppose, as they age, you know, for better or worse, doesn't really matter. Whether it's people say when they're 18, oh, I'll never believe those things that my parents believe, but you gradually do.
Right.
Some do. Majority do. Some don't.
I was 22 years old in 1995, and it couldn't occur to me at all that any of these people would grow out of, you know, kind of the scene and end up being right-wingers. Like, if anything, I've kind of gone the other way. I started out probably more right-wing, and now I don't even know what I am anymore.
That's a good quote. I don't know what I am anymore.
Yeah. That was Morrissey, wasn't it?
Sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Morrissey. Like, yeah.
All right, Craig, I'm sure you've got a good bonus track.
Well, we say when there's elections here, that they have the demographics and how they voted afterwards every time, of course. And people just post on social media, oh, once these old people die, then we'll have a left-wing government or a more liberal government again. But they don't realize there's a new generation of people getting old every election, and they will be the conservative voters. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. People are very short-sighted. Well, I'm going to go with a little-known Metallica track called George and Janis. No, I'm joking.
Oh, that was good.
I couldn't stop myself laughing because I've been building up to it so much. This is a band from Sheffield. We're going back to 2004. And 65 Days of Static is the band. And I was living in Sheffield at university at this time. The Fall of Math is the album. And to allow Will to find it, it's going to be track three, Retreat, Retreat. But I'll keep talking while he's looking it up. I picked it because I was thinking of this. They were obviously influenced by Mogwai. It's just completely transparent. I don't think they ever said it, or at least I didn't see them say it, but it's just obvious, so it doesn't matter. But then Mogwai started to sound more like them on their later albums. I was talking with a friend today on WhatsApp, and he said, well, Mogwai's early stuff is surely the better. You know, the really, really quiet and then explosive, loud guitars. But I'd always liked the more recent Mogwai, which is more like 65 Days of Static. So I just like how they co-influenced each other. This is always more electro from the very beginning, and then Mogwai brought more electro stuff into their music. So this is just, well, an absolute banger of a track. It was always one of the live favorites when they would play. And if Will's found it, it's going to be Retreat, Retreat.
I figured out that there are no spaces in 65 Days of Static.
That's true. I could have said that to help you out there. Yeah.
That's good. Pretty cool stuff. 65 Days of Static.
Yeah, from Sheffield.
That was really good. That's one of my areas, my Godspeed love. Mogwai, etc.
I used to.
It was almost too much for my headphones. Like,
yeah,
Skype couldn't handle it, and it was like Skype's like, yo, dog, this is too much.
It used to be that only band of that kind of style that I was even aware of was Explosions in the Sky. Like, that was the first band, you know, big, loud, soft contrast, instrumental or mostly instrumental band. It was like the only band I knew of, and now I keep learning of more of them from you guys. Because I think
Real contemporaries of Explosions in the Sky, and natural comparison.
This EP is three songs, and the title of track three is "The Major Cities of the World Are Being Destroyed One by One by the Monsters." That's track three. See, if you do instrumental stuff, you can name it anything. So, like, they should probably have a song called George and Janice, right? You might as well.
So I don't know. Well, if your appetite has been whetted, then oh dear, the first four albums, Six Rides of Static, are all good. They became more, not that's inaccessible, but they became, of their genre, slightly more accessible and mainstream rock as they went on. But yeah, even by 2010 and 2013, they're still making good albums.
Yeah, it's good writing music. That's why I've veered myself towards soundtracks, because they have the same kind of, like, you can almost hear when somebody's running or there's a shootout going on, like, just based on the how the music is going. The soundtrack for We Crashed, which is a television show on Apple TV about the WeWork phenomenon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is really good. It's almost like if LCD Sound System were to make a soundtrack. Like, there's a lot of blips and bloops and you know, things like that. So if you're into that type of vibe, check out the We Crashed soundtrack. But yeah,
cool.
A lot of the same dynamics.
All right, it's well above $0. We'll declare once again. And if the listeners are still on, you know, it's pretty amazing. So thanks everybody who can make it through this whole thing. Thanks you guys. It's been fun. It's probably time to let the listeners go, let ourselves go.
I'll be back sooner than last time.
Good. I hope so. Yeah. I'll keep trying to bug you. I was going to say I've got 14 albums on my potential podcast list. It's too many. You don't have time to listen to all of them, but somebody else will help me out selecting them.
Literally, right before we went to air, I got a text from Barrett saying that the new Wilco is the best one of the last 15 years. So,
really,
get him on to talk about that.
Wow, wouldn't it be a great contrast to do Wilco and Odeboke Beaver? That'd be pretty good. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night, George and Janice.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondence from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.